How do we get from Arsenal's one and only Champions League final to a player you likely won't know who has a place in Champions League history forever?
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Wikipedia Wanderers with myself, Dave, and the lovely vocal cords of Josh Call, as you heard. I mean, it's actually him as the whole. It's not just his vocal cords. I don't just have Josh's vocal cords.
That would look disgusting. If you had to choose like one body part which is just kind of quivering opposite you.
So I was just thinking as I said it, I've never seen vocal cords. What do they look like?
I think they're kind of like fat bacon.
Yeah, and they just sort of warble.
Or maybe kind of, I think it's actually kind of string, like kind of really tense, like kind of, you know, like guitar strings, something like that, but thicker.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you not find it amazing that we can speak?
I struggle some days, but yeah.
The fact that it's just we're just choosing to make these noises and they're coming out and our mouth is doing a lot of legwork there to put it into words. I find it fascinating sometimes, the human body.
It is fascinating. The human body is fascinating. It's so fascinating and difficult. It's why I've probably failed biology, because I couldn't be asked to learn about it. So
I wasn't a science guy. Not a science guy at all.
I was, just nothing about humans.
Really?
Yeah, all about the physics and space and all. I mean, I did physics A level, right? I'm an engineer now. I love aerodynamics and stuff like that. But yeah, anything about biology, I was like, nah, boring.
Chemistry for me was always a step too far. I just did not get it.
Yeah.
So many letters and numbers. I suppose it's that thing, if you're good at maths and chemistry, I think chemistry will really follow. If you've got a really good, strong understanding of it, I'd say that they're probably intertwined.
Aren't you an accountant?
Oh, that's different.
It's not maths, is it? It's not maths.
No,
it's different maths.
Well, you do maths at that level. It's not really maths, is it? So many people are really good at maths that can go and do it at university, can't do any mental arithmetic. It's very different.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Anyway, Josh, right. Champions League special.
Who's going to win, Dave?
my head says Liverpool. My heart says I want Madrid to beat them. I really want Madrid to win.
Yeah. That is the correct answer. And what a run Madrid have had to the finals, though. It's just like, never count them out. And that's probably what's going to happen. I imagine Liverpool are going to be like two goals up for probably all the match, but everybody will be like, Real Madrid are going to come back into it any moment now. But it would just be one step too far for them.
Yeah, that's how I can see it really happening. Yeah, really happening. But Josh, you've got a Champions League final to start us off. So
yeah, and it was one step too far for one club.
And have you picked this out of malice, a malicious pick as a Spurs fan, or
somewhat? Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, the 2006 Champions League final between Barcelona and Arsenal, and it was Barcelona's fifth final. They'd only won one before this time.
Oh, really?
And I think it was their first final since 1994.
That seems really surprising with how the success that we know of them in the generation.
Yeah,
and stuff,
it kind of happened after this, and obviously it was Arsenal's first final, and we haven't had the success after that.
first and only, as you mentioned in the intro.
Yeah, maybe the only one forever.
Said like a true Spurs fan. Yeah.
Yeah. Said like a true Spurs. So Barcelona, they had a pretty easy group in qualification. They had Werder Bremen, Udinese, Panathinaikos. So nothing untoward there, similar to Arsenal, really, at Ajax. A side that I'm not sure I'd remember being a side. And I'm going to really hammer the pronunciation here. Thun.
You've got two ways to pronounce that. You got Thun or you got Tun. I don't know which one's right or wrong.
We'll cover both bases. You call them Tun, I'll call them Thun.
Yeah, all right.
A Swiss side and Sparta Prague. So nothing too difficult there. Knockouts, Barca beat Chelsea, Benfica, Milan. Now, because I haven't done any adjacent clicking, is this the Chelsea match which gets everybody up in arms?
Oh, the Michael Ballack doing an eagle impression at the referee. Chasing him back. It could be.
This is Ronaldinho Barcelona, so it might be the swivel toe punt.
Yeah, Carvalho, the round Carvalho toe punt is what I was trying to say. Yeah. It could be.
And Arsenal beat Real Madrid, Juventus and Villarreal. And the most impressive bit, if you look at their results, did not concede a single goal in the knockouts.
Wow, yeah.
All of their first legs, they won 1-0, 2-0, 1-0, and all of their second legs, 0-0s. Yeah. Really shut that down.
I remember speaking to an Arsenal supporting friend relatively recently, actually, who went to the 0-0 game, and he was like, it was one of Arsenal's best performances in terms of they were unlucky to score and defensively they were quite solid. That's interesting, yeah, interesting.
It's pretty impressive. So this final was held at Stade de France in Paris, which, I mean, somewhat surprising when I read it had held the final just 6 years before between Real Madrid and Valencia. And I haven't done any further reading because we don't have a click, but it's because it was the 50th anniversary of the first European Cup, which was held at the nearby Parc des Princes, now PSG's home. So why wasn't it held at Parc des Princes?
Yeah. I mean, would Parc des Princes been of what it is now back then, because PSG didn't have money back then?
Yeah, it might have been, just it's not in as good a state as Stade de France, maybe, yeah. So, for Arsenal, Henry and Bergkamp were the only remaining players from Arsenal's last European Cup final, the 2000 UEFA Cup final versus Galatasaray. And interestingly, another player from that match, Silvinho, was also involved in this picture. He was in Barcelona's squad. Oh, yeah. He made the move to Barcelona this time. Now, probably not as prominent as it would be now, but Barcelona had a notable injury before the match. Lionel Messi was actually missing due to a calf injury he'd sustained v Chelsea. So he was part of it all, but he wasn't actually able to appear. Now, that would be the news leading up to the match for weeks, wouldn't it?
If
Messi could play, but it was just in the four, kind of the initial stages of his career this time, I think, really. And what I found really odd, because we're in obviously lots of transfer announcements at the moment, but a lot of them are holding off. Say Kylian Mbappe, for example, holding off until maybe after a Champions League final. Not Robert Pires. The day before the Champions League final, he announced he'd be joining Villarreal next season. Seems a little odd.
Yeah. Did he start for Arsenal?
He did, because there's rumours it would be him or Jose Antonio Reyes to start on left midfield. And, Pires has maybe the Villarreal decision had an impact on Arsene Wenger's subs. I'll touch on it a bit. Another interesting point, assistant referee was changed on the morning of the game after photos of him emerged in a Barcelona shirt.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Not great. But you go, it's like, it's an unwritten rule, you don't do that. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious to everybody you don't do that.
Yeah. Bloody hell.
So, the match itself, we have, for those who don't know, Barcelona went out 2-1 winners. And what I alluded to earlier with Robert Pires' substitution, we have Jens Lehmann, 18 minutes in, getting sent off. In that instance, sliding down Eta, I think, just outside the box.
Yeah.
Rolled to Ludovic Juli, and he turns the ball into the back of the net. No goal awarded, however, because the referee brings it back and sends Jens Lehmann off. Jens Lehmann, for those who don't know, was one of the most eccentric, rash keepers, aggressive keepers I can remember. Who would you put up in that bracket?
Go on, nowadays, you don't really get goalkeepers like that nowadays.
No, I'd say
he was a fantastic keeper. He was a really good goalkeeper, but he was eccentric and a bit angry.
Yeah, I'd say Edison has a similar level of eccentricity. He'll rush out but nowhere near the aggression.
No.
He was just on, wasn't he? He was just dialed on all the time.
Yeah, that's a good way to sum it up, yeah.
Yeah. But on the 18th minute, Robert Pires is the man brought off for Manuel Almunia to come on to actually have a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
But that didn't really deter Arsenal. They took the lead. They Sol Campbell nodding in, I think, a Thierry Henry free kick, and Arsenal go in at half-time 1-0 up. Now, I suppose it's the timings of careers. At half-time, Barcelona, managed by Frank Rijkaard at the time, bring off Ed Milson, bring on Andres Iniesta.
I'm just looking at the lineup, and it is mental to think they had Xavi and Iniesta on the bench. Nowadays, you look back
at it. Xavi and Iniesta on the bench with Messi missing out for injury.
Yeah.
You're like, we've got them here, guys.
yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, I'll finish off the game report, then we'll kind of go through the side. So So, yeah, Arsenal winning at half-time, Barcelona bring on a sub to try and make a difference. And, you know, Iniesta seemed to have some impact, but it was the 61st minute substitution on of Henrik Larsson which really made the difference. He was the man who was going to be leaving Barcelona after this, and because he wasn't just getting enough game time, really. Obviously made his name at Celtic, an absolute legend there. Was it then he went on to Man United?
Well, we took him on loan when he was back in Sweden. He was playing for Helsingborg, I think, back in Sweden, team, and we took him on loan because one of our scouts was like, oh, he's definitely got goals left in him. He might not be up to the pace, but for a free loan, it might be worth it. So.
Yeah. So Larsson's on in the 61st minute, and a right-back change. Giuliano Belletti comes on for Olaguer just 10 minutes later. And then from the 76th minute to the 80th minute, Barcelona get two goals. And Larsson sets them both up, one for Eto'o, one for Belletti, and the game is completely turned on its head. And you look at, similar to what we mentioned, we look at Arsenal's bench, and there's some surprising players, maybe due to the circumstance of the sending off. But, you know, Arsenal couldn't get back into that point. I think Barcelona had a better chance to even extend the lead at that point, and ran out 2-1 winners, their second Champions League title. And much like Spurs' Champions League final, I think Arsenal left ruining a referee's decision, an early referee's decision. I'd say it's quite similar overall.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Yep. So let's take a look at the sides. You want to look at Arsenal, I'll look at Barcelona.
Yeah. So Arsenal then, Jens Lehmann started in goal, as you said, lasted 18 minutes, and then Almunia came on to replace Pires. But the back four, Emmanuel Eboué, Kolo Touré, Sol Campbell and Ashley Cole, pretty solid.
Yeah, Eboué in for Lauren, who was injured. And actually Ashley Cole making only his third start in the competition because he'd been injured a lot that season.
Okay. Midfield, four across the midfield. They've got here Pires, Gilberto Silva, Fabregas and Chleb. And then they've got Lundberg playing just off Thierry Henry. So I guess it's a sort of a 4-4-1-1, 4-3-3. It can change depending on shape, I guess. So, and on the bench, Almunia. Senderos was the centre-back option. Gael Clichy, Matthew Flamini, Jose Antonio Reyes, Dennis Bergkamp and Robin Van Persie. Yeah,
but the name I was thinking when I said about Arsenal's bench was Dennis Bergkamp remaining on the bench throughout. And you look at that side, when I think of Arsenal's side, I actually think of Lundberg left midfield instead of Chleb, and Bergkamp in that kind of supporting role, Thierry Henry.
Yeah, that's how I would have started.
It would probably be because, you know, let's shore it up a little bit, let's have an extra midfielder in.
I mean, yeah, but Chleb was never known for his defensiveness.
No, very true.
So, bit of an odd one.
But Barcelona side, so a legend of the time, Victor Valdez. Did Victor Valdez also go on to be a Middlesbrough player?
Yeah, after Man United, yeah.
Such a
weird, isn't it?
Odd.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Back four of Olaguer, Rafael Marquez, Carlos Puyol, and just now lost the Europa League final as manager, Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, also ex-Arsenal. Ed Milson, Deco and Mark Van Bommel in midfield, and Julie Ronaldinho and Eto'o up front. Eto'o winning man of the match. On the bench, we have Albert Jaquera, Giuliano Belletti, Silvinho, Thiago Motta, Xavi, Iniesta and Henrik Larsson. So, you know, quite a lot of Brazilians involved. Three on the bench and two starting for Barcelona, and another midfielder, Gilberto Silva, on for Arsenal. And also Spaniards. I mean, Arsenal have three Spaniards in their side.
I think, wasn't this the Champions League after Liverpool had won it five times? This was a brand new trophy.
This would have been, I don't know about this is after the Istanbul game. Yeah.
Which was...
Oh, is that what happened? So they get to keep the trophy proper and then a new one gets built.
There it is. This final marked the appearance of a new trophy following Liverpool's triumph over Milan the previous year. As Liverpool won the competition for the fifth time, they're entitled to keep that trophy, creating the need for a new one.
Oh, okay. And actually, Samuel Eto'o references the Liverpool comeback because it inspired them because of being, you know, two goals down. Was it three goals down? They took it level, didn't they?
Yeah.
And he referenced how that kind of helped them, you know, give them confidence to be able to come back from this. The game ended 2-1, obviously, and obviously because of the the man advantage. We have 64% possession for Barcelona, 20 shots to 8, obviously 2 goals to 1. A lot of talk post-match is Arsenal players being somewhat annoyed at the referee, and also Henri saying that, you know, he wanted to give a bit of a shout out for Henrik Larsson and in the how impressed he was coming on.
I think this, yeah, the referee came out after a couple of years later or something and said he was too hasty in sending off Jens Lehmann. I think what he means is that he should have allowed the goal to stand and given Lehmann a yellow card. Because if you don't send him off, you play advantage, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's probably what he means. But yeah.
Yeah, it was the first ever sending off in a European Cup final.
The first ever?
It was the first ever sending off in a European or Champions League Cup final,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That's
so imagine
that really
it's part of him thinking, you know what, he may be thinking it might not have affected the result after, you know, Barcelona getting a goal in the 18th minute, but it just makes for a more exciting tie. And I imagine he's probably got abuse from Arsenal fans over years.
Yeah, probably. But I won a lot of money on this Champions League final. I had a bet of a player to get sent off, a team to lead and then lose, a defender to score. I've had some other bets on, only for like 50p's and stuff, but obviously they were quite all high rank, like high odds. So
well, yeah, no one had ever been sent off before.
Yeah,
that was a brave one.
Yeah, the biggest one was a team to be leading at half time and lose. That's what I had, a team to be leading at half time and lose, and I got about something like 40 quid off 50p just for that or something. So
I missed it, Meg over here. We say you've just predicted the game.
Well, I mean, I haven't done it since. So, but yeah. I mean, what were your thoughts on the game overall? Can you remember? Because I have quite a vivid memory of the game.
Yeah, I can remember it pretty well, I think. Yeah.
I feel like would it's a sort of a hindsight thing, isn't it? Not a hindsight, but a different reality. Would Barcelona have had the know-how to break down Arsenal if they stood at 11 men? Because like you say, Arsenal had kept clean sheets in all of their playoff game, knockout game. So, it's interesting.
I'm not sure how much more of an interesting match it would have made for. But, yeah, you'd like to... I think Arsenal probably would have stood a good chance. I mean, you've got Thierry Henry up top. Yeah. Anything can happen, really.
And I think so, 11 men on the pitch, Bergkamp does get on. Like, most likely, Bergkamp comes on. It's interesting. But Mark Van Bommel. I don't have any recollection of him being in the game.
Do you not?
No.
It's a weird midfield, isn't it? Edmilson, Van Bommel.
Yeah.
It's very matter of fact. It's very...
yeah.
I suppose you've got Ronaldinho on the side, and even Ludovic Juli, it wasn't complete flair. It was more quite direct, wasn't it?
It's a midfield three, that. Edmilson, Deco and Van Bommel. It's a midfield three where you're saying to Eto, Ronaldinho and Juli, don't worry about coming back. We'll cover you.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Interesting.
Okay.
Cool.
Where are we off to, Dave?
Right. We are off to a player that not many people, I would argue none of our listeners will probably know, but a man that has a place in Champions League history forever. As we said in the intro, we're going to Basil Boly.
Do not know him.
Now,
don't
Basil Boly.
What's happening here?
Is an Ivorian bench. He's an Ivorian bench. He's an Ivorian-born French, former professional footballer, who was a defender, and he played majority of his time in France, coming out for Auxerre and Marseille. He also had a bit of time in Scotland with Rangers, Monaco as well, and a little stint in Japan. He had 45 appearances for France, scoring one goal for the national team. But he has one very important goal in his career, and that was against AC Milan in the 1992-93 Champions League final, where he scored the only goal. And therefore, he scored the first ever goal in the modern-day Champions League.
So when it was
reformatted from the European Cup to the UEFA Champions League, he scored the only goal of the final, so it was the only goal scorer in the first final of the Champions League. And I thought, in a Champions League special, that's quite a nice thing to get to, because it takes away from a game or the competition, or we've got to get to an actual player. And I thought, why not go to the first person that scored I was going to go for the first person that scored the first goal in the first ever Champions League final, but he only scored one. So Marseille won it 1-0. So he was the only goal scorer in the first ever UEFA Champions League final after it was rebranded. So, it's a quite a small page. It's got his career stats in it in the tabular format. It's got his goal against Albania for France. And then some things that I would argue probably shouldn't be in the career part of his page, but because it's such a short page, you probably wouldn't set it up on its own. Whilst at the club, and it's talking about Marseille, he even joined teammate Chris Waddle in recording a song entitled We've Got a Feeling. I don't know why that relates to his career, but okay. And then he's remembered by football fans in England for his appearance for France against the England team in Euro 92 when he headbutted Stuart Pearce.
Yeah, it takes a turn, actually, because the next sentence is also not his highlights.
Yeah, he was forced to leave Marseille because of the match-fixing scandal and the relegation of the club. And it's actually that match-fixing scandal which didn't strip them of their Champions League win, I don't think. But it was all caught up in it.
It was over that time, yeah.
Yeah, were they part of that? He signed for Rangers for $2 million in that summer, 28 league appearances and 2 goals. And then won the league with them in 94-95 with Rangers, but left Rangers at the end of the season to wind down his career with a season back in France before ending his career in 97 with a spell with Uriah Red Diamonds in Japan. And he's the uncle of Yannick Bolly, Charles Bolly, and Kevin Bolly, and the younger brother of former striker Roger Bolly. And I've never heard of any of those Bollies.
No, I'm really wanting to know one of those players. Yannick Bolly, I'm like, Yannick Bolly? No, not Balassi, Yannick Bolly.
Yeah. Exactly. But that's all of his page. He's a current TV sports presenter on French TV, so he's still doing all right. I think he's held in quite high regard in Auxerre and Marseille, so potential ways in there. But
do you think he's been mentioned on their pages then?
Sorry?
Auxerre probably mentioned on their page, isn't he? 254 appearances.
Yeah, I think Auxerre would be mentioned. I also think he would be mentioned on Marseille, because they won the Champions League and he was part of that squad. So I think he would be mentioned.
Other than that, you've got kind of seasons at three clubs where it'd be unlikely he'd be mentioned.
Well, Euro 92, because he headbutted Stuart Pearce. So we know he was definitely at Euro 92. And of course, the 1992-93 UEFA Champions League final or campaign for Marseille. Potentially, Chris Waddle. Let's see if Chris Waddle's page mentions that he recorded a song with Basil Bolly. So
maybe.
Who knows?
I'd say you've left the riskiest click till last there, Dave.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, got to tease the listeners, haven't we? So
we have. So where do we think we're going to start from then?
I mean, lots of options. I'm tempted to go with Tun or Thun.
Exactly. No, I'm exactly the same, Dave. I saw it. I don't know much about it. And so let's go there.
Okay. All right, then. Done. That was an easy decision. So FC Tun. It doesn't say this is how you pronounce it. Oh, wow. They're in the second division of Swiss football now.
Oh, that's not helpful.
No, it's not. No. Automatically don't like them. Automatically not a fan. They don't have any nicknames on their page. So.
Oh, no. You can't have that. It's got to be like Red Stars or...
Yeah.
So across the top of their badge is Berner Oberland.
Yeah.
Do we know why?
No.
Oh, they're from from area Bernese Oberland, town. That's
okay, Josh. This page is absolutely dreadful and doesn't help us. They play at the Stockholm Arena, accommodates 10,000 people, both seated and standing. The club's colours are red and white. Literally, history is about how they were drawn in the same group as Arsenal in the Champions League.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we got clubs though. We got their European history, European record here. So we've got lots of other clubs that we can click on. So obviously got that Champions League campaign, their only Champions League campaign. We've got lots of Europa League campaigns that have happened subsequently. They were in Europa League just as recently as 1920, although they got knocked out to Spartak Moscow. Current squad, name 5 players past and present.
Oh, no chance.
No chance, no. Hakan Yakin, I'm going to go for. He's a Swiss player, isn't he? So maybe he'd have been there.
I don't know. It doesn't say.
Doesn't say. Great. I'll take that one as a yes then.
Okay. former coaches.
Rogue Englishman. Yes, of course. Rogue Englishman, Jimmy Townley. Love it. What year was that? 1949 to 50?
Shouldn't laugh. Could be the click. Could be the next click.
We've seen FC Turin and thought, how can we get as far away from Champions League football as possible?
Yeah.
Murat Yakin managed them.
Oh yeah. There's no one else though that I know.
No. I like Georges Bregy. That's quite a nice name.
I quite like the name Urs Schonenberg, which is a nice name. 1st of Jan till 13th of February 2006. 1st Jan 2005, right, February 2006.
But overall, they were, just you know, quick stats, formed in 1898, 124 years ago, capacity of 10,000, manager is Carlos Bernegger, and they are in the Swiss second league. So we've covered them. They play in red and white, and then also in a colour I don't really know what it is, khaki, I'd say. They try and camouflage themselves.
Army green, yeah.
Yeah.
All right then. That was quick and quite painful. So where do we want to go? What are you thinking?
Well, it's going to have to be probably another club, unless we want to go for one of these Swiss managers.
I'm leaning towards a club, I'll be honest. I mean, there's a club there that's just jumped out at me that I'd love to go and know more about. Won't help us at all.
What, the Albanian side?
The one from Georgia.
Chikura
Sakahiri. Sakahiri. But we're not going to go there, Josh. We're going to go...
Even though they've had good European campaigns.
Oh.
Maybe.
You want me to go and click on Chikura Sakahiri? I can see the little grin on your face. You do.
No, because they might not have any European camp. They got beaten 5-1 by FC Tun.
Exactly. No, we're going to go to... And I'm going to make a decision now. We're going to go to Palermo, is what I'm pointing at.
Okay.
So
aren't they relegated? They're not in Serie A now, are they?
They're not in Serie A, yeah. They're in Serie... Is it C or B or...?
Serie C. Oh, my goodness. Serie C. Are you just hoping that Carl Lafferty's mentioned on this page?
I mean, it would be nice, wouldn't it? Or Dybala. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Dybala, so...
Okay, so we have Palermo Football Club. The nickname's the Pink and Blacks or the Eagles, because they've got a lovely little badge, which is pink and black with an eagle head kind of intertwined into it. Quite like it. They've got a number of founding years, which... I imagine they've had financial issues and had to be respawned a number of times.
With the latest being only 3 years ago.
Yeah, SSD Palermo.
Hmm.
I love the owner is Hira Horror and manager is Silvio Baldini. Yeah, and they play in Serie C. Okay. A fresh start in 2000, on the 23rd of July 2019, in compliance with Article 52 of the NOIF, Mayor of Palermo, Leoluca Orlando, confirmed 6 declarations of interest have been presented for the new Phoenix Club to be admitted into Serie D. Yeah, that's our Phoenix Club. Oh, dear.
Wow. Josh, I'm going to stop you there, Josh.
Yeah?
5 players past or present.
Fabrizio Micheli.
Paolo Dybala. Kyle Lafferty, that's 3.
Yeah.
I feel like we should be able to do this.
Barzagli?
Ooh, yeah, I think Barzagli's one. Yeah, I do think Barzagli's one. And... Oh, I swear they had... Maybe it's Barzagli I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of it like they had a really good centre-back that went on to play for Italy, but that could be...
Could be Barzagli, yeah.
It could be Barzagli. Ooh. I'm gonna go Lorenzo Luca. Did Pisa buy him off Palermo when they got relegated to Serie C?
Cavani.
Cavani. Yeah, all right.
Cavani was there, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was. That's 5. Lovely.
Done. Tick job that done. Box.
They've got a bit that says former player, so I'm going to go and look at that straight away.
Going to have a look at that.
Luca Toni, Javier Pastore, Dybala, Cavani, Vazquez, Abel Hernandez, Josip Ilic, Fabio Grosso. That's who I was thinking of.
Fabio Grosso, yeah.
Grosso is who I was thinking of, yeah. So, okay. Nice.
Yeah, Luca Toni was one. He was always, you know, up a mould of striker which has really kind of died out, but it seemed to be kind of like Ruben Nistelrooy, but just offering very little in the build-up.
Yeah. Scored goals, though. Scored goals.
Oh, always be, you know, poking that ball in.
Yeah.
Okay. And current players, do we have any? I mean, Serie C, unless there's an old guy. I'm not going to know any of these. Lots of Italian names.
No, I don't think I know any of them.
No. Nor I. Okay. Managers, chairman history, obviously rogue Englishman, Edward de Garston, and Clive Richardson, actually, as recently as 2018-19. How do you get that gig?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a weird one to have. I mean, they had a lot of chairmen, haven't they?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, have we ever seen another page that had chairman history? And it's got to be into kind of 40, 50 names here?
Yeah, that's a hell of a lot.
I'd say that points to why your club's been mismanaged and had to be respawned about five times.
Yeah, and there's only a couple of names that are repeated as well.
Maybe they have some form of ruling, kind of like a limited term they can serve.
Yeah, potentially. Lots of honours. As you would expect, they have been around quite a while. So
lower-level honours, so nothing Serie A, is there?
No, but I was just thinking that. Do you think the honours, in terms of Wikipedia, now everyone knows that this Palermo team is the same Palermo team, but shouldn't the honours be split out between which version of the team won it? Because all of these weren't won by this current Palermo team.
I always consider them the same team, though. Like Rangers, for example, I just think of them as Rangers. Let's not get into that. They've just been merged together in my mind.
But now this is controversial, but shouldn't that mean that MK Dons have the same honours that Wimbledon had?
Wasn't there some form of agreement where we went, you have them?
Well, I don't know. But that is one team that folded and just got moved, and this is a team that have folded and just been reborn. So,
yeah. True.
Yeah. Just a conversation starter.
Lots of honours, but, you know, Coppa Italia as recently as 2010-11, but other than that, it's Serie B, Serie C, C1, C2, D. And then, you know, lots of other rogue ones in the, like Lipton Cup, Challenge Cup, which, God, I mean, 1910s to 1915, they won it five times out of six. Lovely. But
we've got a little story around colours and badge. So do you want a little story, Josh?
Yes, please.
So the official badge, as you said, is a white eagle's head and three pink-black feathers within a black stylized letter P. Represents the city of Palermo. Lovely stuff. We're not worried about that. We're worried about its foundation. Palermo originally played with a red and blue shirt as its official colours, but decided to switch to the unusual current choice of pink and black in 1907. This was the change of denomination to Palermo Football Club. The colour choice of pink and black was suggested by Count Giuseppe Aroldi, a prominent founding member of the club. In a personal letter, Arioldi wrote on the 2nd of February 1905 to English club councillor Joseph Whittaker. He defined pink and black poetically as colours of the sad and the sweet, a choice he amusingly asserted to be suited for a team characterised by results as up and down as a Swiss clock. Didn't know Swiss clocks go up and down. I assume they're the ones that have the things that dangle at the bottom that go up and down to keep time, to keep the seconds. Noting also to the fact that red and blue were very commonly used for choice of colours around Italy at the time. The club had to wait for their new jerseys for 3 months because no pink cotton flannel material was available in Palermo, and the appointed tailoring company could only find suitable material from England and had to import it from there. The vivid new shirts were first worn in a friendly match against Sir Thomas Lipton's crew team. The match ended in a 2-1 win for Palermo. From 1936 to 1940, the team were forced to play in red and yellow jerseys due to an imposition by the fascist regime of Mussolini. Red and yellow being the official colours of the municipality of Palermo. When the club was refounded in 1941, following a merger with Juventus Palermo, they started dressing in light blue shirts on the pitch, but quickly switched black to the very popular pink and black 1 year later. There you go.
I'm a big fan of the pink and black.
I'm a big fan. I've got a Palermo shirt in my cupboard. So.
Oh, really? Nice. Yeah, big fan of it. Okay, so other than that, we've got competition history previously, how many times they've been promoted and relegated. We've got their European record. UEFA Cup only, not been a Champions League competitor. We're on a Champions League special here, and we've chosen a club never to compete with Champions League. Well done, us. And we also have players, you know, record holders, so most Serie A league goals for Fabrizio Micheli, most goals in a season, 30 from Luca Toni, winner in Serie B. We have, you know, biggest wins, most European appearances, Barzagli, Brienza and Cassani. Most appearances in all competition is, oh, lovely, Roberto Biffi, 372. I immediately think he's a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Don't know why, just immediately think he's a goalkeeper. Okay, so where should we go? I feel like we should go to a notable player.
Yeah, I was sort of leaning towards Luca Toni, after you had a bit of a chat around him, or Micheli, who does get a mention in the supporters area.
Yeah, let's go Micheli. I've always been a big fan of Micheli.
Okay, all right then. Fabrizio Micheli is a former Italian footballer, a professional footballer who played as a striker. He has played, what's his career like? Milan youth team, Caserano youth team, Caserano senior team, Tirana, where he played 120 times, Juventus, Perugia on loan, Fiorentina, back to Juventus where he didn't play but went to Benfica on loan, 165 appearances at Palermo, Lecce, and then finished his career in Bercicara.
In Malta.
Malta?
The Maltese Premier League, yeah. That's one of the first mentions of Malta, I'd say.
Yeah. He scored twice in 10 appearances for Italy. So, what do you?
Oh, is that all?
Yeah, that's not... I feel like that seems like quite a few for someone like Micheli. Because I remember him being I don't really remember him being a striker either, like a winger, wing forward.
I think he was always quite quick and quite nimble, and because of his size, maybe it was. I think he was probably coming on when. It was a main target man and then someone else around it being just behind or just off rather than the front two. And we have a style of play, so usually deployed as a creative second striker, well known throughout his career for his all-round attacking creative abilities, specifically his technique, pace and powerful and accurate finishing, both inside and outside the area with either foot. Whilst being a prolific goal scorer, also a regular assist provider due to acceleration, balance, agility and his technical skills. Also capable of a playmaking role. Blah, 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 blah. And do you know who I would have... I feel like he should have been transferred to.
Who's that?
West Ham. He should have had a stint, a really pathetic stint at West Ham where he had like 27 appearances, 2 goals.
It's funny because you say that because in the Benfica part of his page, in July 2006, Micheli's loan to Benfica was confirmed despite interest from Aston Villa.
Wrong claret and blue.
But played in the Champions League, scored a magnificent scissor kick goal against Liverpool during that competition, which sent Benfica through to the quarterfinals. He attracted clubs' interest as Roma and Inter Milan, but opted to stay for one more year in Lisbon with Benfica.
He was 35 at the time, and he said it was the most beautiful experience of his career. He was one of the most cherished players by Benfica fans, scored 14 in 39 matches.
No. That doesn't say he was 35 at the time. It says at the age of 35, he said that.
Oh, okay. And so how old was he?
He might have been, but...
No, he was 26.
Yeah, because he's only 42 now. So I'll be like, that'd be quite impressive.
Oh, that's an unnecessary addition there.
Yeah.
Someone's skim reading.
Yeah, I agree. So you can take a note. We can change it into. We can move it.
Just later in his career, he.
Personal
he
life.
That.
I'd say he's mentioned that as part of his personal life. So he can go down there. Post playing career, after retirement, Micheli kept working on his youth football team in his native Salento, originally founded in 2012. He announced he was a new assistant coach at Albanian club Dinamo Tirana. He was also named in charge of the club's youth sector there, but he resigned in March 2021 after only 2 league games for the Albanian club. Lovely. In July 2021, he accepted an offer from Triestina to become the club's under-19 chief youth coach, but resigned from this position 9 days later. Doesn't like being a coach, basically.
No. We have a controversy section, and am I right in saying that Palermo's on the island of Sicily?
It is, yeah.
Which is renowned for its mafia connections.
It is, yeah.
And the controversy is that McLeese seems to be entwined with the mafia.
Ooh.
Yeah, allegations of extortion, aggravated extortion. And I suppose it's one of those things where if you're... He's going to be a rich, prominent person on the island. And so, yeah, I imagine they probably aren't too far away from each other.
That last bit of that is very interesting. On the 21st of October 2017, Mikkeli was sentenced by the Court of Palermo to 3 years and 6 months imprisonment. And it goes and talks about what it was and how his appeal failed. And then at the end it says, on the following day after his appeal had rejected, he turned himself into the police of the prison of Rovigo. So... has he just got out of prison? Because 2017, 3 years and six, October 2017, 3 years and 6 months will be now-ish.
Yeah, it doesn't actually say if he ever went to prison.
Yeah, it says he turns himself in, but yeah, interesting.
Did he go to prison? I didn't expect that to be a question I'd be asking about Mikkeli.
No, there you go. Right, while you're doing that bit of research, where could we go to potentially get to Auxerre, Marseille, Euro 92, or Chris Waddle, I think was the options I gave.
Not the only options, but... So, is there any other... Oh, hold on. I was looking for links, and I've seen Birmingham City. So, Mikkeli Strong, 2009-10 season, played a big part in the Palermo's campaign. Club finished fifth. Tied for best league, finishing in club history, narrowly missing out on Champions League football. This also brought transfer and interest from Birmingham City, whom, despite his injury at the time and the prospect of Mikkeli missing out on most of the first half of the season, still bid a reported $5 million for a 31-year-old striker. That wouldn't have been nice.
Yeah.
Mikkeli can't be going from Sicily to Birmingham. He can't be doing that. Okay, so we have... any other Champions League reference? We want to go there. Or another player which you think's got more Champions League prominence?
We also do need to actually go back in time as well.
Yeah, so we need to pick someone who's old.
Yeah, who's old. I mean, Del Piero's mentioned. His performances at Ternana and Mikkeli had Mikkeli dubbed the new Del Piero by many sections of Italian media.
That's not a bad move.
Romario's mentioned. He was dubbed the Romario of Salento.
So, Marseille beat Milan, did they?
They beat AC Milan 1-0, yeah.
So, if there's an older... because Del Piero was a Juve... quite strange for Italian, but did he play for anyone else from Juve? Was he just a one-club man, Del Piero?
No, he went to Australia.
Might have had a later stint, but I suppose in Italy, I think he might have been. Okay, international career. Did it mention anyone who we could pick on? No, we got. Was it Lippi who would be in charge of?
Oh,
wasn't Ancelotti, was it?
I can't imagine. It might have been, but I don't think so. I've just read a very strange sentence that sums up Italian football. It's to be so weird, right? At the end of the season, there was a blind auction between Fiorentina and Juventus to decide Mikkeli's ownership. Juventus won it by a lump sum of approximately 6.7 million euros for three players. This included Mikkeli for 2.39, Enzo Maresca for 7,000, and Giorgio Chiellini for 4.3 million euros. Therefore, Mikkeli had to return to Turin, but was sent out on loan to Benfica. What?
Why?
Blind auctions for three people. Yeah, I don't know. But the only reason that caught my attention there is Camaresca and Chiellini are mentioned. So.
But I've got a feeling it's Marcelo Lippi.
Do you think it is?
Yeah, and I think we should go for Marcelo Lippi mentioned in the international career.
Okay. Yeah, all right, let's go for it then. Marcelo Lippi.
It's not him.
It's definitely not him. No, definitely not him.
Because he recently, as 2019, was managing, but in China, managed Italy a couple of times, Juventus a couple of times, Inter, before that, Napoli, Atlanta. Yeah, it's not him.
That China stint, does that mean they... We'll read it in a minute, I'm sure. But does that mean they sacked him and reappointed him? Because it says 2016 to 2019 and then just 2019.
Does it seem that way?
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, he looks stunning in his Italy kit or Sampdoria kit at the top of his page.
He does, doesn't he? As manager, he's won one World Cup, 5 Serie A's, 3 Chinese Super Leagues, 1 Coppa Italia, 1 Chinese FA Cup, 4 Italian Super Cups, 1 UEFA Champions League, 1 AFC Champions League. What's that one?
Asia.
Asia. Yeah, 1 UEFA Super Cup and 1 Intercontinental Cup. So, pretty good. Lippi is the first and to date only coach to win both the UEFA and the AFC Champions League. Not as great a challenge as making out to be.
I'm just wondering also, here.
Yeah.
If we just clicked on UEFA Champions League, would that not say it was reformatted in 92-93 and the winners were?
Oh, yeah. We'd be able to, we've got into someone.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's an easy way out.
He's got some Champions League pedigree here we can pull on.
Yeah.
Club career is very briefly mentioned. His Sampdoria, and again, a lovely kit, Sampdoria.
Yeah. Lovely kit.
He spent most of his career there, 10 years there, 69 to 79, 274 appearances, and then stints at Savona, Pistoiese, and Lucchese.
Easy for you to say.
Thank you. I'm not even GCC Italian, that's Italian. I don't know what you're called. I studied Italian in year like 8 and 9 at school.
I don't think I did Italian when I was 8 or 9 at school.
No, year 8, year 9.
Oh, year 8. I was going to be like, you did Italian at primary school. Blimmin' hell.
No. God, he's got a lot of individual awards. Okay.
I've gone to have a look at the China situation. He left them on the day after the 24th of January, so the 25th of January. But on the 25th of January 2019, on the 24th of May 2019... Marcello Lippi was reappointed as head coach of China, replacing compatriot Fabio Cannavaro after his brief tenure. He resigned for the second time that year on the 15th of November following a 2-1 defeat to Syria.
Seems like a bit of a favour. Like, I know you've left, but we don't really like Fabio. Can you come back, Marcello?
Yeah, it does.
Coaching philosophy and management style, they've kind of crowbarred this last line in. During his early coaching career, Lippi was known for smoking... Mert Couture cigars while sat on the bench during matches. Is that his style? Is it his management style?
Yeah, true. It's a bit odd. It's a bit odd they've put that in there. I mean, where do we want to... There's so many names mentioned, Josh, and so many things we could click on.
So if we go to maybe something in his Juventus time, we may have something. We've got... Yeah, again, you've got lots of players mentioned here. Antonio Conte is mentioned.
I mean... The names mentioned in his Juventus stint are ridiculous.
Yeah.
Vialli, Ravanelli, Baggio, Del Piero, Peruzzi, Di Livio, Torricelli, Deschamps, Paolo Sousa, Antonio Conte, Tacchinardi and Marocci. Ciro Ferreira.
And then he goes, then several new players arrived. Zidane, Davids, Inzaghi, Marco Giuliano, Paolo Montero and Igor Tudor.
I mean, Filippo Inzaghi's a AC Milan.
Yeah, then we have his Juventus second period where he's got Nedved, Buffon, Lilian, Thuram.
Names all over the place.
Edgar Davids had a Milan stint. If we want to just get to Milan.
Did Zinedine Zidane play for Marseille?
Yes, he did.
Do we want to go and learn any more about Zidane? I feel like everyone knows about Zidane.
Didn't Ravanelli play for... Did Ravanelli play for Milan?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, Giuseppe Rossi is mentioned in his later Italian stint with Mario Balotelli. Dave's a fan.
Love Giuseppe Rossi.
I think I don't want to click on Zidane. It's too big.
Yeah, I don't really want to click on Zidane. But we need to go back in time. What was Fabio Cannavaro doing in 93? Would he have been playing? Probably not.
No, I think it would be a little bit too early for him. What about, I don't know, Pavel Nedved? It's a player that I know about, but I don't know too much about him.
Yeah. I think he's too. He'd be too young in 92.
Edgar Davids? Definitely Adam Lansdowne. I think it probably just comes after that, 92, 93.
Yeah, he's sort of in the Zidane bracket, though, isn't it? I know quite a lot about Davids. Up to the point that he even played for blooming Barnet. Player manager, gave himself the number one. Yeah, crazy.
True. Let's play with Spurs. What about Giancarlo Marocchi? Don't know him, but he was mentioned in the.
Yeah, I was going down that route of potentially going for the older names, but someone we sort of know, maybe like an Angelo Peruzzi.
Yeah, goalkeeper.
Goalkeeper, and that, I remember him being a goalkeeper. I think Fiorentina. He had a stint at.
I'm happy with Angelo Peruzzi.
Yeah, all right then.
Has a very strong jaw from memory.
Let's go then, Angelo Peruzzi. Oh, okay. There's some dates that have caught my eyes already. I mean, 1992 Olympics gets us into the era we need to.
It does. So Angelo Peruzzi, born in 1970, now 52, started his career with Roma, Hellas Verona, Juventus, Inter, Lazio, but Juventus makes up the lion's share. Yeah. Well, actually, Juventus and then Lazio, both circa 200 appearances.
Definitely not Fiorentina.
No, it's with Lazio I remember him at. Yeah. Regarded by Italian pundits as one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time. Won 3 Serie A titles, UEFA Cup and UEFA Champions League. 31 times to Italy. He's obviously an era where Italian goalkeeping was amazing. So I think he's should be quite proud to get 31 caps.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. A powerful, athletic, complete and consistent goalkeeper, although injury prone. Renowned for his physical strength, positioning, explosive reaction, speed and agility in spite of his sturdy physique. Yeah, he was because of his stocky physique, Peruzzi was given nickname Tyson in reference to Mike Tyson's powerful build and the boar, or Cinchiglione.
I don't think I'd be too annoyed if someone said, God, you look like Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Like,
unless it was because I had a tattoo on my face.
Yeah. I know in our reference, that probably is more likely we'd be called Tyson. So yeah, just for having a tattoo on our face. Nothing
represents Tyson physically that much.
Yeah.
Okay. We still know, we're about as close to Champions League as Marcelo Lippi took us, really, aren't we?
Ah, hang on.
Oh.
Hang on. He became runner-up in the 1992 Coppa Italia final. It doesn't say who they played, but there's a chance that's got to be Milan, right? Percentage-wise.
Yes, that is correct. ESM Team of the Year. We've covered that before, haven't we?
We have, yeah. We've had ESM
European
Team
Sports
of the
Media.
Year.
Yeah. He was actually suspended for a year in 1990 for failed a doping test because an appetite was suppressed and he was taken at the time. Struggled with his weight, maybe.
Yeah.
Being a stocky build, wanted to slim down.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Honours, yeah, we have Serie A, Coppa Italia, Supercoppa, Champions League, Super Cup. What year was the
92-93, 92-93 Champions League final.
Oh, so we need 93-94 Super Cup, don't we?
Which means Juventus lost. No, they won the... Hang on, this means... If Juventus won the UEFA Cup in 92-93, they should have played against Marseille in the Super Cup, and therefore he should either have winner or runner-up in his honours.
So why has he got the UEFA Super Cup 92-93?
He hasn't. He's got UEFA Cup 92-93, and then he's got UEFA Cup 96.
Oh, yes. Sorry, yeah, I misread, yeah.
Surely, UEFA Cup 92-93, it will say it was won by Juventus, who had to then play Marseille in the Super Cup final.
That is a good chance.
If the Super Cup happened in 92-93.
Yeah, well, let's go there.
Yeah? You want to go there? Okay, do you want to read anything more about Peruzzi? I've sort of jumped into that.
I'm Peruzzi'd out.
All right, let's go then. The 1992-93 UEFA Cup was won by Juventus, who beat Borussia Dortmund 6-1 in the final aggregate over... What? that needs an edit. Get that marked down. Yeah, who beat Borussia Dortmund 6-1 in the final aggregate over. In the final, over aggregate, at least that should say, or on aggregate. But yeah, 6-1. A record score for a UEFA Cup final. It was the third victory in the competition for the Italian team, the first club to reach this record. Three seasons had passed since the ban of English clubs in the European competition due to the Heysel disaster. Has been lifted this campaign. The number of English clubs in the competition was increased from 1 to 2. English League runners-up Man United were joined by third place Sheffield Wednesday, though both teams ultimately had short-lived runs in the competition. Even Poland earned one more seat, while Finland and Hungary lost one.
Did you realise Sheffield United placed third? Sheffield Wednesday, sorry, placed third?
Nope.
No.
I don't remember that. Do not remember that. Interestingly, though, Josh, if there isn't a mention of Marseille on this page, Ajax were the defending champions but were eliminated in the quarterfinals by Auxerre, who is Basil Boli's other club in France.
Oh, there we go.
So
I've just gone straight to a final and it was played over two legs.
Yeah, there was back in those days, yeah.
Yeah. And it was just 3-1 Juventus with Baggio's getting the goals. Dino Baggio and Roberto Baggio for Juventus, Rummenigge for Dortmund, and then second leg, Dino Baggio 2 and... And Moller getting a goal for Juventus. I don't want to... Is that Gerd Moller? Andreas Moller? Don't know. And he was actually an Auxerre player who was the top scorer in the competition that year. So we have Gerald Baticle, George Weir, Baggio. We've got Dino Baggio. We've got Fernando Hierro, Gianluca Vialli, Tony Yeboah there for Eintracht Frankfurt, and Ivan Zamorano. Some lovely names there.
Yeah. I was just having a little look, Josh, and don't want to, you know, influence where we go next or anything, but Waddle is mentioned for Sheffield Wednesday.
Oh, he will be.
So, because he scored in the competition. So, you know, it's a risky click.
We've been around, so why not just go to Waddle? We've got Panathinaikos mentioned, who Barcelona played, yeah. Oh, God, I'm looking at some goal scorers. Chef Wednesday, Wilson and Sheridan. Such generic English names. Have something interesting.
George Weir was the second highest scorer in the competition for PSG with 7.
Yeah. And he played with Ginola. Wow. There's a game at PSG. We've got Ginola and Weir scoring.
There are some amazing names in here.
It is. It's great. Trip down nostalgia lane.
Yeah. Mihailovic for Roma, scoring against Dortmund. Oh,
Casaraghi, Ravinelli.
Was this Casaraghi? Oh, obviously Casaraghi before his Chelsea career, because that was his injury that stopped his career. He retired. But did Chelsea sign him from Juventus, Casaraghi?
It would work out. So, yeah, potentially. Maybe a stint after that. We have Bosman scoring for Adelet.
Nice.
Friend of the pod.
Yeah.
Gustavo Poyet looks like he scored for Real Zaragoza.
Nice. Chapuisat, remember him? For Dortmund?
Yeah, I was about to mention Chapuisat, yeah.
Did you? Oh, sorry, yeah. Hagensucker, yeah, lovely names. Lovely names.
Wim Jonk, Edgar Davids, Aldair for Roma. Oh, this is great.
Now, interestingly, it doesn't actually mention they went on to play, so maybe the Super Cup didn't happen in 92-93.
I think maybe if you clicked on the 1993 UEFA Cup final... Because there's no words around the final in this. It just shows it. We're on the UEFA Cup page as a whole.
True.
I don't know if you clicked on there, you'd get some mention of it.
Or was it still... Would the winners of this gone into the Cup Winners' Cup? Or was that only for domestic cups?
Oh, I think it was just domestic cups, I think.
Right, okay. So, I mean, the logical thing is to go and click on Auxerre and hope that Basil Bolli's mentioned there, I think. So.
I think so.
Yeah. All right. Well, good trip down... Nostalgia Lane. Let's go and have a look at Auxerre. 5 players, past or present.
I've got this nailed. Because I remember Nexies. That side. Yeah. Jean-Alain Boumsong.
Yeah. Cissé.
Kalu Fadiga.
Nice. Basil Boli. No, we're not allowed him. That's unfair. So we've got 4. One more.
Nailed, I tell you.
Eric Cantona. Laurent Blanc.
Not bad.
Stevan, he had an apostrophe in his name. Givash. Yeah, Givash. He was all there as well. No. The Diplomats. Thoughts on that nickname?
That's far too formal.
Les Diplomats. No.
Is there ground anything related to Didier Deschamps?
Hold the phone. They're in League 2. Ligue 2.
Dave knows his French.
Nearly fluent. Can you not tell? Yeah, when did that happen? Wow.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
Turns out it wasn't that recently.
All right.
2012. Auxerre's 32-year stay in the top division came to an end after a 3-0 away defeat at the hands of Marseille.
Bloody Marseille. I always remember Auxerre being a really good team.
Yeah, recently as 2021, we would achieve their best finish in the second tier since their relegation with a 6th-place finish. They really haven't recovered.
Wow. I mean, it's not a good sign when all those players we named, they have a notable players list, and Yaya Sanogo makes the list.
Oh, I think, I'm not sure he's actually even playing anymore.
He's a clickable link.
He ain't going to help us. Oh, Bakari Sagna is there. But also, is there Basil Boly is in that list?
He is. Basil Boly's in there. He's also mentioned at the top paragraph as well.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, they won Ligue 1 in 95-96. They've won Ligue 2 in 1979 and 80. A few Coupe de France is in there, 93-94, 95-96, 02-03, 04-05. The good old Intertoto Cup. They won that in 2006. Joint winner.
Obviously.
Obviously. And whatever is the Coppa del Alpi, they won in 1985 and 1987 as well. So...
Guy Roux has managed them 3 times.
Oh, yeah, I didn't look at managers.
Oh, blimey. That's it. So, notes. It has notes on what happened. So, you know, Pierre Grosjean, Auxerre's first coach. Jacques Boulard, first manager to manage the club twice. Joseph Holman, which I'm going to guess is English. He hasn't got his badge, but first manager to manage out of a non-French nationality manager side. Guy Roux, you know, managed them twice. And second, led the club to its first league title and Cup de France title. Alain Firard served an interim role due to Roux taking leave absence due to a coronary artery bypass surgery. It seems overly specific.
It does. It really does. It really does. Jack Santini was their manager at a point.
Oh, former Spurs manager. That was a bleak time.
Yeah. I knew that name. I just couldn't think of where.
Yeah. Parked the bus. He did. He got sacked pretty sharpish.
Oh, they Marseille, that season that they finished... Oh, no, in 14-15, they finished 9th in Ligue 2, but finished runners-up in the Coupe de France, losing to PSG at the Stade de France Stadium in front of 80,000 people.
I can't help in their history that their league title should be more than the... Well, this is the entirety of their explanation of their league title. During the 95-96 season, the club won Division 1, first time in their history, and also won the Coupe de France.
Is that it?
Feels like it. Yeah, that's it. Feels like that could be a whole section going, these players, these managers, the season. It's just not. It's lacking a bit of love, I'd say.
Yeah, it
I'm
is
not going to do a full research piece on who played and this, that and the other, but yeah. So they must have been something, they must have achieved something, because there was a good, like that good side, Mexes, Boomsong, Fadiga, and probably Cisse as well, did something. Must have been kind of...
Unless it was just sort of like
Europe.
They were an amazing team because they got close to Lyon and PSG or something. Like
maybe it was in 2000. When would it have been? Like kind of early 2000s?
Oh, yeah, it must have been.
So they had a third place finish in 01-02. Maybe. Group stage of the Champions League, maybe. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, won the Cup 02, 03 and 04, 05. So maybe around then. Semi-finals of the League Cup.
Champions and a player that's always resonated with me as well, the goalkeeper Fabian Kuhl.
Fabian Kuhl.
So, yeah.
Nice. Did you always sign him on Champ Manager?
No, I never signed him, I don't think.
Oh, wow.
But a great use of name in any audio required.
True, very true. Right then.
Right. Basil.
Off to Basil we go.
Off. Let's complete the circle to Basil Boly.
Definitely not a circle, mate. We haven't gone back to the start, so it's more
complete
of a
line.
Zigzag line, similar to how we play golf, probably. It's very crisscross.
Yeah.
So
yeah. No circle here.
Exactly not. So yeah, Basil Boly.
That's my strong point.
Yeah. Basil Boly. Done.
Basil Boly. Right. So this is the Champions League special leading up to the Champions League final. This weekend, we have the 2006 Champions League final between Barcelona and Arsenal, 2-1 Barcelona. In that run-up to the final, Arsenal played FC Thun from Switzerland, which intrigued us. FC Thun, in the 11-12 Europa League campaign, played against Palermo. We thought, why can't we click on Palermo? We can. A Palermo legend was in the page there, Fabrizio Micheli. During Micheli's time playing for Italy, he played under Marcello Lippi. I wrongly thought maybe he managed Milan in the 92-93 Champions League final. He didn't, but he did have some pedigree as a manager of Champions League, but that's not what enticed us. It was Angelo Peruzzi from his time at Juventus. Well, Angelo Peruzzi must have some. Maybe he played for Milan. He didn't either. He played for Juventus and Lazio, of note, but he did win the UEFA Cup in 92-93, playing for Juventus against Dortmund. In that 92-93 UEFA Cup, Auxerre played, and Gerald Batikle was actually top scorer, but we clicked on Auxerre. Auxerre's notable players, a list of around 10 players, one of them being Basil Boli, the player who scored Marseille's goal to win them the Champions League final in the first iteration of the Champions League in 92-93. Circle, not complete. Line, complete.
Excellent. And how many actions did we pull out of that?
Three actions, I think it was, overall. Age 35 for Fabrizio Micheli confused me. Did he go to prison? Was what I've written down there. And and in the UEFA Cup 1993, a lot of the use of the word aggregate at random points in sentences.
Excellent. Well, that was good. It was good fun. And it brings an end to this week's podcast and this season.
Season 19 games in, and we've finished it.
Yeah, 19 games in. Season 2 of Wikipedia Wanderers is finished. And there's, as always, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at WikiWanderers and on Instagram at Wikipedia Wanderers for suggestions for things you'd like to maybe involve rules for next season, because Season 3 will be coming soon. Are there any new rules, any sort of differences that we'd like to involve in the show? And there may be a little bonus Season 2 finale, sort of Season 3 starting, I don't know what we're going to call it, but there might be a bonus live recorded episode, which we're going to hopefully do, although they're all live, obviously, but together in the same place, which could be good. So we look forward to seeing you in Season 3. Thank you very much for listening to Season 2. Season 1 is always there in the back catalogue if you want to get some more Wikipedia Wanderers, but thank you. We'll see you very, very soon, but for now, goodbye.